It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Demonstrators from around the state met at the steps of the state capitol Saturday to protest certain bills that passed during last week's lame duck session. We're talking about the bills, what happens next, here on the state capitol report. During the debate, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss defended the bills as a way to balance power in state government.
The situation that we are sitting in right now, if we do not pass these proposals, is that we are going to have a very liberal governor who is going to enact policies that are in direct contrast to what many of us believe in.
Your thoughts on the session are welcome throughout the hour at 800-642-1234. Let's go to WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, who didn't miss a moment of the session beginning to end. Sean, thanks for coming by.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So where are these bills right now? Do we know if they've been handed over to the governor?
I don't know if they've actually been handed over to the governor. I think as of Friday, they had not yet been sent to Walker. I mean, they're going to go there. It's just a matter of whether or not that clock has started ticking. When he gets them, certain deadlines kick in. I can tell you without a doubt that this will all be wrapped up before the next governor and the next legislature are in office. But as of Friday, he had not yet received the bills.
And so once he gets those bills, he has 6 days, I believe. Is that right?
Excluding Sunday, okay. Under state law, he has 6 days to review them. Even if he doesn't call for the bills, he has until December 20th to call for the bills. If he hasn't done that, then they'd be sent to him automatically. So there is a process that will be in motion one way or another. It just looks like as of right now, you know, people are talking about calling on the governor to sign or veto these bills. They're not technically before him.
There's been lots of pushing and pulling here since the lame duck session. The Republican-controlled legislature passed a number of measures without the support of Democrats. Here's State Senator John Erpenbach, who told his colleagues on the other side of the aisle that they'd regret this.
We're going to look back on this, and it's going to be a stain on the Republican majority legacy and Scott Walker's legacy. The first thing Scott Walker did when he came through the door here at the Capitol was to create chaos. The last thing he is doing on his way out the door is to create chaos.
So those are certainly some strong words there about creating chaos. Give us a refresher. What changes have happened regarding the powers of Governor-elect Evers, and what is this chaos is he alluding to?
It's tough to summarize these because they go so many different directions. I guess we'll start with stuff that you might have heard of, you know, the most. One would restrict early voting in Wisconsin. This isn't a restriction on Tony Evers per se, but it comes after an election that saw early voting numbers hit record highs in Democratic strongholds that helped propel Evers to a narrow election in Wisconsin. It would be restrict early voting to 2 weeks before an election. It would prevent Governor-elect Tony Evers and Attorney General-elect Josh Call from pulling out of the lawsuit to overturn the Affordable Care Act. This was kind of campaign promise number one for them. It's a power that they have right now in Wisconsin, but under these bills now headed to the governor's desk, that move would have to be okayed by the legislature's budget committee, which will be controlled next year as it is right now by a 12-4 Republican majority, mm-hmm. And they support that lawsuit. You start getting into other changes. They're more specific in nature. I mean, a governor-elect Tony Evers wouldn't be able to make the Capitol a gun-free zone, for example. Governor-elect Evers would have less control over the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Governor Scott Walker's flagship jobs agency, which is signed the contract, Wisconsin's contract with Foxconn. So that's a big change. And we also learned last week that the person who is the liaison between Foxconn and the state would report to the WEDIC board instead of to the governor. So at least during the first few months of the year, they would be reporting to a board where the majority of appointees are legislative appointees and not the governor. So, you know, we can kind of go on and on.
So far less red tape there, perhaps.
Or a friendlier audience,
Okay. Well, Governor-elect Tony Evers has said that all options are on the table when it comes to what he'll do regarding the plan to restrict his powers. So he said on Meet the Press that he and Governor Walker had talked. Do we have a sense of how that went?
He didn't say much in that interview. I mean, he didn't really criticize the governor in that interview. He said the governor didn't commit one way or another to how he was going to handle these bills. Evers thought that the governor was going to potentially sign them, but he called those bills, as he has elsewhere, a hot mess is the phrase that Governor-elect Tony Evers keeps coming back to. But Governor Walker didn't tell him in that conversation, according to Tony Evers, how he was going to act on these.
Governor Walker posted a series of 21 tweets Saturday that each started with the words "Our Legacy," which promoted his last 8 years in office. We're looking at whether the extraordinary session will have an impact on his legacy with Sean Johnson. He's WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. You're hearing him on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Incoming Governor Tony Evers talked to Governor Walker and encouraged him not to sign the sweeping bills that moved through the legislature last week. We're talking about them on the State Capitol report, but first, let's check in on our winter membership drive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Noah Ovshinsky. This is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio, and our year-end membership drive is a time for you to think about how much you've learned from and enjoyed WPR programs in 2018, and think about how you want to keep them going strong in 2019, and then take action with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Kate, now is the time to make that pledge of support this hour. We have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, including a pair of anonymous 9XM Leadership Circle members. That means your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match right now by doubling your support to Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here on the morning show and all day long on the Ideas Network, you hear multiple sides of an issue so you can make up your own mind. And together, we keep up with the big issues of the day, such as the lame duck session. And we have some fun along the way. We follow our curiosity and we learn.
There's really nothing else like this on the radio. It's something special, really. And it's your support. It's a vital part of what makes it all possible. In fact, it's the biggest piece of our funding here at WPR. It's you. It's listener support. So please make your pledge during this, our year-end membership drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and support the radio programs you count on.
If you're looking for the best way to make a gift to WPR, become a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make automatic monthly contributions from your bank account or credit card.
A lot of people give $15 a month on this plan. Some give $100. The amount, though, it's up to you. Pick an amount and make that pledge. And as a sustainer, you're an ongoing member of WPR, providing reliable funding for the favorite radio station. So please give now and become a sustainer at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing this drive. Pledge any amount and you could win two tickets to see Hamilton in Chicago. And that's not all. The lucky winner will also enjoy dinner out on the town before the show and an overnight stay. Like Hamilton, WPR programs engage and inspire you.
Oh my gosh, they're both so educational and smart and funny.
This is how you bring people together, and it always adds up to one exciting experience.
Donate for your chance to see Hamilton and support your source for the daily stimulation you just can't live without. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the rules and details at WPR.org/drawing and donate any amount right now to be entered. Here's how.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Noah Ovshinsky. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this year-end membership drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
We know you value your time, and we value your time, too. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes of your time, I promise. Just tell us your name, contact information, and how much you want to give and how you'd like to pay.
It's quick. It's easy to do. Your gift right now really helps. So take the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And now is the time to make that pledge of support. Don't wait. We have a dollar-for-dollar match. It is still in effect. We have quite a bit of money left to raise. So please give now while we have this dollar-for-dollar match in effect. Your dollar will go twice as far this hour at 888-202-2552 and at WPR.org.
And if you're a sustaining member, make ongoing monthly gifts. Thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift is powerful. It makes a difference. And thank you so much. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're debriefing on last week's lame duck session where lawmakers worked through the night to vote early on Wednesday, December 5th, on a package of bills that would diminish the powers of the incoming administration. Lawmakers weighed in on the legislation over the weekend. Here's Republican Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald.
We won an election, too. Both houses, both chambers are Republican, will be under Republican control. And we're simply starting to realize that this governor, especially over the last couple of days, I think, when you see the rhetoric ramped up, he will probably be the most liberal governor the state of Wisconsin possibly sees.
WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is our guide. Getting your questions, your reflections, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. What did you think of this lame duck session? If you're a lawmaker, what do you see as the impact? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sean, going back there to Senator Fitzgerald's comments and the sense that, you know what, we have something here too, and we're doing some housekeeping. I think I heard that word batted around a bit about this legislation. So how are Republicans fighting off this idea that this is a partisan grab?
I mean, it goes beyond housekeeping for sure. This we know. This goes beyond just locking into place things that Republicans have done over the past 8 years. But I think what they're most focused on are the changes to administrative rules that would make it harder for Governor-elect Evers to undo some of the bills that they've passed over the years that Governor Scott Walker has implemented over, Medicaid work requirements, for example, mm-hmm. for somebody who receives food share. A Governor Evers couldn't go in and just undo that by rescinding a federal waiver, federal permission to do that, essentially. He would need to have the legislature on board with that change. So that's what they're focused on. They're saying he shouldn't be able to undo this stuff that we passed.
Let's go back to the Affordable Care Act for a moment. Wisconsin is currently involved in the federal lawsuit against the ACA, and if it's successful, this challenge against the ACA could eliminate protections for those with pre-existing conditions. What did this legislation do about that suit?
What it does is that it says that Attorney General-elect Josh Call, Governor-elect Tony Evers would need the legislature to get them out of that suit. So they right now they could do it themselves. Under this plan, the legislature would have, they would have to go to the legislature's budget committee, which has a 12-4 Republican majority. And I mean, Republicans have been supportive of efforts to undo the Affordable Care Act, and there's no sign that they wouldn't be supportive of that lawsuit in this case.
Let's hear from Attorney General-elect Josh Call weighing in on that.
I heard lots and lots of people talking in the campaign about how they believed in protecting, keeping in place protections for people with a pre-existing condition. But this action is fundamentally inconsistent with that, because this is going to make it, in all likelihood, impossible for the state of Wisconsin to withdraw from that lawsuit.
So if Call has to go along with this lawsuit, you were bringing in some different language during the politics podcast about what he might do.
I don't know what he would do.
Okay.
I don't know if they have to, if the legislature can control what he says if he's a part of the lawsuit. You know, he thinks that the state should be out of it. It was a lawsuit of choice. You know, not every state joined it. So if Wisconsin is forced to be a part of that, and we don't know how this is going to end up, because there is going to be likely a court challenge to overturn much of this. But if Wisconsin is part of the lawsuit and Josh Call is leading the Department of Justice, who's to say that he couldn't argue against the lawsuit from within? I don't know what kind of constraints he would be under in that situation.
So what is the relationship like between Republicans and Democrats right now?
Well, not great, I guess. I mean, this is the opening salvo, I suppose, between the Republican legislature and Democratic governor-elect Tony Evers. You know, Tony Evers is the, for all intents and purposes, the head of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin right now. So when you hear somebody like Senator Fitzgerald talk about the rhetoric coming from Democrats, that sort of gets attached to Tony Evers. If you hear Tony Evers talk personally, there's not a lot of rhetoric there. I mean, he's a pretty mild-mannered person. He's not willing to call this a coup, for example.
Sure.
But the parties are very much unhappy with each other right now after this extraordinary session.
Sean Johnson is WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. Stays with us as we continue our discussion, getting your thoughts on the extraordinary session. Were you in Madison last week to speak in favor of the session legislation or against it? What was your experience like? Did you demonstrate over the weekend? What message do you want to convey to the governor? Call in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue after this look at the news on the Ideas Network. The morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer Kent. On a single day, Governor Walker submitted 82 names for people to sit on various boards and authorities and councils, and all 82 appointees were approved. Looking at last week's lame duck session, when lawmakers worked through the night to pass sweeping legislation that will weaken the power of incoming Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call, WPR's Sean Johnson is here going point by point, getting your thoughts at 800-642-1234. How do you want the governor to act on this legislation? What bills stand out to you, the ones that you watched? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Steve now, joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been watching a lot of the news and even contacted several of the Democratic lawmakers, and I haven't seen this question asked or seen the answer to this question. The Democrats did the same thing in 2010 after Scott Walker won the election. They called a lame duck session in order to ram through state contracts, knowing full well that Scott Walker ran on a reform package wanting to do different things to those state employee packages, yet they made every attempt to try to pass them through. And I have not heard anyone in the media ask anyone, the Democratic lawmakers, a question about the obviously hypocrisy and crocodile tears that are going on now. I mean, it seems like people think we're Dory from Finding Nemo and can't remember things from 4 seconds ago.
Steve, thanks for the call. Sean, bring us back to 2010 and what went on there.
I covered it. It was really dramatic, and I have asked Democrats about it this time around, too. What happened was you had state employee contracts that had been kind of hanging out there. They had not yet been approved by the legislature. And so after the 2010 elections, in which Democrats lost everything, the governor's office, you know, the Senate, the Assembly, they came back for an extraordinary session or a special session on December, you know, like mid-December. They passed these contracts out of the Assembly. They did not pass them in the Senate. So, yes, that is an issue that where Democrats did come back and try to make changes after an election before the next governor came in. I guess the distinction is this would be the first time, according to the Legislative Reference Bureau, that a legislature has used an extraordinary session after an election before a new session to restrict the powers of an incoming governor and an incoming attorney general. So of all the times over the history of Wisconsin when these things have been used, this is the first time that they have used it to restrict the power of an incoming governor and an incoming attorney general.
And I think the first documented extraordinary session was back in 1928.
It was in the 20s. And that was about, I think, public welfare, something along those lines. There's been sessions on confirming appointments, collective bargaining agreements, special election laws, you know, post-election and pre-new session. Those are the topics that have been covered. The 2010 session we just discussed. It's notable also that in 2010, Governor Scott Walker sent a letter asking Democrats not to do this, asking Democratic Governor Jim Doyle not to make these changes, and was very specific, actually, about not making changes when it comes to Medicaid, because mm-hmm. Governor Walker wanted to have the freedom to shape that program. Democrats did not make those changes to Medicaid. Governor Walker did reshape the Medicaid program in Wisconsin. So now he's in a position of locking in those changes to prevent Tony Evers from making big changes if Walker were to sign these bills.
Let's go to George now in Milwaukee. Good morning, George.
Good morning. A couple of points regarding some of the things that Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald has said that I think are really misleading. One is, he said, well, we won, you know, the Republicans won the state legislature, both houses, and so, you know, we have as much right as the governor does, the new governor, to make law. And I guess I would say to that, well, of course, you redistricted it in 2011 to your extreme advantage. For instance, in this past election, even though not as many Republicans ran in solid Democratic districts, still Democrats had 53% of the total vote, and in the Assembly they're ending up, I believe, with, I think, 38 Assembly people, and so a 25% difference there if you looked at it. The other thing that he said that is really misleading is that the early voting disadvantages rural areas. Not true. If any place in Wisconsin wanted to have early voting as much as Milwaukee and Madison did, there's nothing that prevents them from doing it.
George, thank you so much for the call. So George brings up gerrymander districts and early voting, Sean.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with early voting first, the point that you hear from Republicans, it's frequently Senator Fitzgerald on this, is that those smaller rural areas don't have the resources to allow in-person absentee, also known as early voting, in the way that Madison and Milwaukee do. Now, that argument has been played out before a federal judge before and been rejected. I mean, a federal judge previously struck down limits on early voting in Wisconsin. These are pretty similar to those limits that were struck down by a federal judge, but not the same. So you don't want to use the word undoubtedly, but it sure seems like that's going to play out before a federal court sometime in the near future. As far as the gerrymandering argument goes, yes, you're hearing Democrats talk about this a lot, and they have, Democrats got like roughly 53%, 54% of the statewide vote for assembly, but have 36 seats in the assembly in what we know was basically a 50-50 election for governor. So you're hearing these common refrains now from Democrats and Republicans. Democrats are saying to Republicans, you've got an unjust majority here. It's built on the back of a gerrymander. Republicans telling Democrats, you only won the governor's office because of this big turnout in Milwaukee and Madison, and we're the voice for the rest of Wisconsin.
So while Governor Walker hasn't said when or whether he'll sign the lame duck measures, which he briefly covered earlier, you know, we've covered, he has tweeted, though, about Kimberly Clark. An incentive package bill was originally the reason GOP lawmakers said they would consider an extraordinary session. So why didn't this bill make it to the floor during the lame duck session?
The short answer is that Republicans did not have the votes. And Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald came out about a week before they came to the floor and said, I only have 10 or 11 Republican votes. That's not a lot. I mean, he has a caucus of 18 there. So that's, you know, 7 or 8 Republicans who are not going to vote for this bill. So by that measure, it wasn't even close. And so when something's not even close, it doesn't get a vote on the Senate floor. I will be interested. I think a lot of people will be interested now to see the response of Kimberly Clark, because this was billed as something where if this doesn't pass, these jobs in Wisconsin will be cut, hundreds of jobs. And so now you know, we're in a position where it's, it didn't pass. By all indications, it's not going to pass. And, you know, so will that in fact happen? Will these jobs be cut, or will the company soften that back and say, look, we found a way to do this without the incentive package?
Yeah, and Governor Walker has even alluded to being able to try something else to get some incentive through. Is there any, does that have any legs?
While he is still governor, it seems pretty unlikely.
Okay.
What he tried before was, we used the phrase Foxconn-style incentive package for Kimberly-Clark because it would be a tax credit package that in percentage, you know, in terms of percentages, it would mirror what the state did with Foxconn and pay Kimberly-Clark for jobs preserved at these sites. That did not have the legs in the state Senate, and so, you know, given that they wrapped up last week, I suppose nothing's impossible, but it seems unlikely.
There are some other things that didn't pass. One is moving the presidential primary day. Can you remind us what happened there?
This was one we were talking about a lot because it seemed like it came up out of nowhere. It's not something that we had considered at all over the course of, well, years, decades. At least there'd been no public debate about this.
Yeah.
And then we learned that it was something that Republicans were considering, moving the presidential primary in 2020 from April to March. The benefit to Republicans from doing that would be that it would decouple what might be a high turnout for election for Democrats if there's a Democratic presidential primary. You would decouple that from the state Supreme Court race that is scheduled for April of 2020, in which conservative Justice Dan Kelly is up for election. So you would insulate Justice Kelly from a potentially high Democratic turnout election. That did not pass. There was a lot of pushback from clerks on this who run elections. There was a 6-0 vote from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which consists of Democratic and Republican appointees, saying this would be, I forget the exact terminology they used. They didn't say it was impossible. They just said it was going to be especially difficult.
Okay.
And that got pulled from this extraordinary session agenda. They didn't even take a vote on it, which tells you likely the votes weren't there.
So what are you watching moving forward here, Sean? What happens next and what's your focus?
The focus is all on Governor Scott Walker at this point. What's he going to do with these bills? I think the presumption is, given how closely he has worked with Republicans over the past 8 years, that he's probably going to sign them. He's hinted that he's not, you know, he's not offended by this package at all. He said that we have a term that runs through January. They have a term that runs through January. And so we're going to look at these bills one by one. You know, typically for Governor Walker, that has meant we're going to approve these bills. But there are some, I guess, some issues in here that he has vetoed before that restrict the power of the governor when it comes to rulemaking, for example. He said before under Governor Walker that would, you know, inhibit the power of the executive, and that's no good. What's he going to say when it's not Governor Walker? He has the power potentially to use a line item veto on some of these. So I guess that's what we'll be watching. Also, what's the court challenge going to look at like that is ultimately going to come against these bills?
You're leaving the door open there. Sean Johnson is WPR News' State Capitol Bureau Chief, who's joined us here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network.